Welcome to For the Record, an unfiltered view on current trends and timeless advice for surviving in the aesthetics industry. Whether you're an injector, practice owner, sales rep, or marketer, it's time to set the record straight. Each week, we cut through the chaos and showcase diverse perspectives and winning ideas from the best minds in the industry. I'm your host, Dr. Tiffany Hall, Chief Growth Officer at Aesthetic Record. Now, let's get started on this week's episode. Hey guys, welcome back to season three, to another episode of For the Record. We're getting kicked off here this season with all kinds of provocative thoughts and new ideas and innovative entrepreneurs, and also those who are innovating as entrepreneurs inside of other practices. And we have one of those treats for us today. We have a special guest with us from Virginia, one of my favorite states that I love so much. We have Amy Herman on, who is the Chief Aesthetic Nurse and the Director of Aesthetic Nursing at Mount Castle Medical Spa and Laser Institute. Hope I said that right. Which is affiliated with Mount Castle Plastic Surgery. So she's gone for, I think, 13 years. And this one clinic that's now become two has grown leaps and bounds. Lots of injectors, lots of providers, a lot of patients. I looked at the numbers online, a lot of patients. So she's a busy gal, also a gain trainer. And she's here today to talk to us about really her story, what she's been doing, how she's doing it all, how she's keeping it all straight, and how she's building a practice within a practice and, frankly, kicking ass at doing it. So, Amy, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for the introduction.
Everyone always says those are like my favorite. They're my favorite parts. I'm like, this is what I think about you. This is not what's on paper. It's what I think about you. I never practice them, by the way. But I'm so glad to have you here because I know all about Mount Castle. You guys are an AR customer. I've been talking about you for years, and to have you here is like one of those real moments where, you know, your life kind of collides all together. So it is my honor to have you and to hear all about what you've been doing. So let's start right there with your story is really compelling. The 13 years in one spot. I've read that you were like an admin for the plastic surgeon before you came in as a nurse. And you said I did a lot of grunt work and I was underpaid. So take us back to the very beginning when it all started and how you went from that to where you are today.
Awesome. Yeah. So I met Dr. Mountcastle actually right out of nursing school, and I interviewed for the job. He was part of a large surgery practice, and they were looking for a nurse to come on and work with him. And I remember interviewing for the job, and I was 21. So it was my first interview. I hadn't even passed my nursing boards yet. And I kind of left the interview thinking like, I don't know how well that went. They ended up calling me, offering me the job. And I started off kind of just working side by side with Dr. Mountcastle, doing all of his pre and post surgical patients, helping him with his consultations, and really kind of building his practice. He'd probably been practicing for just a few years by the time that I had started with him. So he was new. I was new. This surgery practice was three other general surgeons. And eventually, after being there for about a year, he started getting really busy and decided to kind of break off into his own practice. And he took me with him. So we started off, it was him, me, and then he had a physician's assistant who is now his wife and a very good close friend of mine. And it was just the three of us. And I answered phones. I surgery scheduled. I was with him in the office for his surgeries. Meredith would go to the operating room with him for his surgical procedures. And we just started building. And so I just celebrated my 13-year anniversary with him. So we've come a long way. He has his own staff upstairs. We have our staff down here. We have 5 injectors, 3 estheticians, 5 front desk people. And we've just grown like quickly, actually, in the last like 4 or 5 years. So this is our third office. We all started together on the 4th floor, then we moved to the 1st floor, and now we're on the 2nd floor. So a ton of growth. It's been a lot. It's hard at times, I think, to work with somebody side by side for so long. But I think between, you know, Dr. Mountcastle and I, there's really a lot of mutual respect for each other. So he really does treat me as an equal. I've never felt like, you know, I was just being treated like his nurse. I helped him build everything. I sat through all of the ups and downs and the hardships. And it's definitely difficult. And I think that I definitely am different from a lot of injectors, popular injectors, I would say, that are on their own, because I do stay with the practice and I work under a plastic surgeon. And I think that that comes with a lot of benefits, really. I love the collaborative team event that we have here. It's really nice to be able to lean on somebody who is a plastic surgeon, is board certified, who has a lot more knowledge than me, of course, and somebody that I can learn from, and be better and do better. And again, just the respect that he's given me, and the ability to like build this, and the trust that he has had in me, has really shown. So that's kind of it in a quick 13-year nutshell. So yeah.
I think it's impressive. I think you mentioned, you know, working for someone for a long time. The tenure in our industry is not long, as you know. You're obviously employing people. You know that people don't stay very long. And it's such a phenomenon here that people come and they go. It's like ships in the night. But, you know, I'm curious, in that 13 years, you're kind of an OG in aesthetics, right? Because we're like a baby industry. When did you start peeling off from helping him and saying, I'm going to take my own patient load, do injections, start, you know, the non-surgical side of the business? Was that 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah, probably like closer to 6 or 7. I remember like being in with him doing his surgical procedures, and then those patients being like, oh, well, do you guys do injectables? Do you do Botox? And I was like, yeah, I can do Botox. And so that's how it started, is I just really started to build my practice as I saw all the pre and post-surgical patients or the consultations. And then I, like you said, like this industry is just boomed. I mean, it went from people being like, oh, you do Botox, or like, oh, you do injectables, to like, wait, where do you go to get your injectables done? So I've kind of been through all of that. Where it was very hush hush, or maybe like people were ashamed of it. And now it's like my patients, and it's friend referrals, and people posted online that they're getting injectables. And it's just such a cool shift. But more seriously, we moved down to the first floor like about 6 years ago. And that's when I really like broke off from being Dr. Mountcastle's nurse. So when I was building my patient base, I can't tell you how many times I still ran up 3 flights of stairs to help him with certain difficult patients. And then also just training the people that came behind me as his nurse, because we'd just been together for so, so long. Often he would just have a moment and be like, go get Amy right now. And I would drop everything I was doing and like run upstairs and help him. And kind of making my patients wait. But that's really how we built it. It was a lot of patients we already had, and it was just the popularity of the injectable just being more accepted and people wanting to do it. You know, it was difficult for me because I came into this industry before there were trainers. Like there was no such thing as training and having these like wonderful people come in and show you how to do this stuff. So it was a lot of self-taught, a lot of learning by not doing the right thing and having them come back. I always joke with my patients that have been with me for like 10 years. I'm like, why do you still come to me? I was terrible. And they're all like, ah, you were nice. You had potential. You know, we liked you. We figured you'd get better. And so, it really just was a lot of trial by error, and why I really love training my new injectors, and then also training with Gain too, training people and stuff that really like took me a very long time to understand. And hopefully, you know, they don't have to make the mistakes maybe that I did, and they can learn a little quicker, because people do come into this industry much quicker than I did and make it very quickly, which is wonderful. So it certainly took me a long time to build and to be where I am. But yeah, it's just, it's been great. And the growth is awesome. So.
Well, I think in three seasons, you're the first person to ever admit that it takes a long time. I mean, I mean that sincerely. I think Heather Ripien talked about it a lot, how she learned and how to make mistakes. But people underestimate or undervalue how long it takes to become a good injector. And I think it's interesting. I was listening to Erica talk, Erica Berry, and she's like, I look at pictures of my work 2 years ago, and I'm cringing of like, oh, my God, how could I have ever thought that was a good idea? But you don't know what you don't know until you figure out, you, to your point, they come back, you make a mistake. But so interestingly, as I'm hearing you say this, I'm guessing that Dr. Mountcastle does not inject. He's not an injector?
No. And he doesn't know anything about injecting.
Well, I find
not at all.
And I'm wondering if, you know, you staying there for 13 years, that's always a point that people bring up is if the surgeon's also an injector and the nurse becomes an injector, it's hard with the patient load. Who gets them? Who takes them? They don't want to see you anymore because they want to see him still. And yeah, I think there's like a lot of it's just confusing or convoluted, where I think in your case, it's beautiful because you guys had a very distinct difference of what your skills were. But at the same point, I heard you say that his patients spill over into your practice, which is great because you can kind of share back and forth. But going through all that, thinking about the business side of it, like how does that work? You know, if you think about like his perspective, you're probably building a business as big as his, right? You're probably rivaling his revenue, I'm guessing, on the non-injectable or the non-surgical side. Like how does that whole thing come together? You know, who gets to say in things? Give me like the insider politics on being an entrepreneur inside that office.
Oh, such a good question. You know, to be honest, there have been a lot of moments between us where we don't agree. And I think that both of us sometimes take a break from each other. You know, if we disagree about a certain policy or the way that I want to do things down here, and maybe he's just not quite on board with it. We've been together long enough to learn to just like take a hard reset. So in the heat of the moment, things sometimes come off wrong. They're not said right. Feelings are hurt. And so over the years, if we just take a little break and then kind of sit back down, it's almost like it's like a fresh breath of air for a moment. It's like, okay, both of us got a little worked up. I'm stubborn. You're stubborn. But let's see if we can like come to an agreement here. Cause at the end of the day, I think that he knows that I care so much about this place and I just really want the best, not only for our patients, but for the staff. I think he knows that. We just have different ways of maybe like showing that, I would say. And he's warmed up so much more to like certain things that I like to do with the staff that he might have thought in the past wasn't necessary. And it just kind of becomes a thing. It's like, hey, sorry, got worked up. We didn't agree about this, but like, can we try and come to some kind of agreement to where we're both happy? You know, I started with him when I was 21 and I'm a nurse. Like I don't have a business background. I don't know a lot of the business side of things. I was very quickly kind of thrown into this. Like I do all the back end stuff. I know the payroll, I do the books, I know the taxes that come out. I know what it costs to run this place. And it just takes a lot of mutual respect, I think. And we certainly have had hard seasons where we struggle, and where it's just like, ugh, but they're really, honestly, has never been a point in time where I'm like, this isn't working, blah, blah, blah. I think it's just, we've cultivated like almost this family environment between us that has worked for us, and it doesn't work for everybody. And it's hard sometimes to work for a plastic surgeon. So anybody out there watching who works for a plastic surgeon knows like they can be a difficult group of personalities. But yeah, I think it really just comes down to like having the conversations and just making sure that we are on the same page and also not jumping the gun on each other and making a quick policy change on anything. I feel like that's when we get a little stopped up, is if he maybe impulsively wants to do something or I impulsively want to do something. So we balance each other well. He's way more impulsive than I am. I'm like halfway impulsive. So I ground him. And then at certain times where if I want to take off with something, he will bring me back as well. So it's like a yin and yang thing. Again, it's, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There have definitely been difficult times between us, but just cultivating that like family environment is really what I strive for. Not only like with my relationship with him, but like with everybody here. So yeah. And it's kind of like having a personal relationship with him and his wife outside of work too. Like our oldest daughters are 4 months apart. They're almost 10. So they've known each other since the day they were born. Our youngest daughters are 2 years apart. So they get along real well. But it's also separating the, like that balance, right? The work balance and then the home life and our personal lives. So it works for us. It's difficult at times, but again, I think we know each other well enough to see the triggers or to see things that bother each other and just be like, hey, let's take a minute. Let's chat when like you calm down or I calm down. And so far, 100% of the time, we've been able to kind of squash whatever it is and move on and continue to like build in the best interest for our patients and then our staff too.
Well, it's funny you say that. I feel like you're me. I'm living your life, you know, working with people who are really close to you personally. And then if that, even if that comes and goes and falls apart and you're still all here together and, you know, it's kind of like a marriage. I feel like being in business with somebody, whether you're actually in business on paper or not, doesn't matter. Like you're in business together, period. You're building a business together. It's in many cases almost more than a marriage because now your financial well-being is tied to it. You're feeding other people because of how, what the business is producing. So you have to worry about their family and their financial future. I feel like there's a lot of pressure there. And people are quick to say, nope, I don't want to do it. We didn't get along. I'm leaving. But I think there's a big, there's a lot of difference in being alone. Because what you said I think is so compelling is when I make a decision, he is my counterbalance. Because I'm a rash decision maker too. Like I'll just go like a bulldozer. I need someone to say, Tiffany, I appreciate you wanting to have an urgent need to fix the problem, but your solution, you're coming from the wrong place, right? You're coming from a place of panic and not of thought. And I think having somebody there to tell you, let's gut check this idea, make sure it's the right one. You come out ideally in a better solution that's, you know, has balance to it. Because I have no balance, Amy. I don't know about you, but I have no balance in my life. So I think, I don't know, I think there's a blessing in that. But, you know, did you ever at any point think to yourself, or what has made you not think to yourself, I want to go out on my own? What keeps you there? Just you as a person, forget the relationship of saying, I don't want that for me right now. It's not the right thing for my family.
Yeah, I, you know, I have a lot of people ask me that question, especially because I'm in nurse practitioner school now. I feel like all my patients are like, well, why are you doing that? Are you leaving? What's your plan? And that's not my plan. And I just, at the end of the day, like I mentioned before, I appreciate working under a medical provider, like a plastic surgeon. I have the utmost respect for him. He's good to me. And he's been there for me through a lot and supported me always. So again, if there are certain things that he's done that, you know, don't make me very happy, or like I said, my balancer, I'm always like really drawn back to that loyalty. Like I wouldn't be where I am without him. There's no way. And yeah, I could totally go off and do this on my own and probably build it just as well. But I've invested so much of my time and my energy and my heart really like into this place. I do, like I am an individual, but I do still like identify very heavily like with Mountcastle Medical Spa and the team that I have spent countless hours just training under me here. I really just feel that sense of loyalty to him, and I wouldn't like take everybody, and I wouldn't do that. I'm happy at the end of the day. Like I come to work and I love what I do. And I love my providers and I love my front desk. And like you said, if, you know, I am impulsive, he's way more impulsive than I am. But I think having that balance is really good. And I definitely hit road bumps with him for sure. But it's been so long at this point. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't think anything will tear us apart. But we joke sometimes, like after if something comes up and we disagree or whatever, I'm like, we all need to sit down and see a marriage counselor, I guess.
It's kind of the same thing.
Because it's hard, and it's hard to communicate with people. And at the end of the day, like, I do understand that he is my boss and he is the owner, and I respect that, but he does give me a lot of respect, and a lot of praise too. Like, he's very quick to pull himself back and be like, hey, like, you know, I know what you built down here. I know how hard you work. I know how many hours you put into this. Like, he actually will tell me, like, you need to slow down a little bit. You're doing too much. And I'm like, do you really mean that? But I love this environment. And I know so many people are out on their own and going out on their own. And I think that it's great and I admire it. It's a ton of work. And I know that. I don't know. I'm happy. I'm happy. I wake up happy. I come to work happy. And so I don't know why I would mess with that.
That's the quality of life that you want, right? Just be happy. But, you know, to kind of shift gears here, but to your point before we move on, I think with the private equity money coming in right now in such massive amounts, we're going to see a lot of these individual owners get swallowed up. So they may think they're going out on their own, but they're going to be working for somebody else very soon. They're going to be signing a contract to stay on for 3 years to then become the employee of whoever bought them. So going out on your own, there is a benefit to having a larger financial buffer so that you don't need to get bought out, that you have enough in the kitty that you don't need that. So I don't know. I'm an entrepreneur. I do not own our company. I like working under the auspice of someone else who had to put all the money up front to do it. I didn't have to. I get the benefit of it now, and I get to take that money and keep making it and growing it and watching it grow. But the first few years of when it's really shitty and terrible and everyone hates it because it's just hard, I got to skip all that, and now I get to do all the growth and the building. And so, you know, mine's a little different than yours, but I can completely agree or empathize or see what you're saying in all parts that you just said. I can live through all that with you. But thinking about what you're doing personally, and I was reading your Instagram. We do a lot of research before the podcast episodes, and you mentioned, you know, 8 providers, all the front desk. I think I read that you have like 150 people a day in your practice, like getting injected or getting treatments, lasers, whatever. Let's talk about that. First of all, how do you manage just the sheer amount of bodies and getting them to the right room on time, treated on time, happy? Because that's a very large operation. I mean, I'm sure you know that, but that's a very large operation in a single day.
Yeah, it's wild, actually. I really have to give a lot of credit to my front desk. I think without a solid, strong, caring front desk, I think the back crumbles. If you don't have those people getting people back roomed, processing the checkouts, you know, quickly but efficiently, your providers will absolutely crumble. I tell my front desk on the day, I'm like, every day, I couldn't live without you guys. Thank you. I'm no one without you. Because it's so true. And they are the people too, that over time, they learn they know who our patients are. So they know who could be squeezed in and who maybe takes a little extra time to be with, and like who would be better with a certain provider. And it's taking the time to really train the front desk. I try and sit down with my girls every morning, even if it's for like 10 minutes, and I just spit some stuff off to them. Like, hey, I've got these couple patients here, little FYIs about them. Or I will be like, got a couple phone calls, maybe somebody was a little unhappy about something, and then I just quickly like role play with them. I'm like, hey, let's reword this a little bit. This patient was a little unhappy. Maybe we could have approached it like this. And it's just like the quick corrections with them is important, and the communication with them. So obviously we use a static record that helps us flow people pretty well, and it honestly keeps the amount of communication that I have to talk to them to a minimum, because I don't have to walk up to the front desk when I'm done with them. They have the chart. They all are very familiar with Allie and Aspire. But I think if your front desk is weak, or if they don't care, or if they're not passionate about what we all do here, I think the back absolutely crumbles. And I think not taking the extra time to just recognize them, you know, because it honestly might be a harder job than us as a provider, because they're dealing with the flow, like over 100 people in a day. And as we all know, you know, patients are going to be a little bit more snappy to them and then get in the rooms and be perfectly fine with us. So they really do take like the brunt end of a lot of stuff. And if they don't feel like they're appreciated or recognized by the providers, you know, I think your overturn of the front desk is just awful. And I see it in a lot of places I train. You know, it's just like new front desk every other week. I solidly think it takes like 6 to 8 months to be really well trained for the front desk, because there's just so much that we do as a practice, not only with injectables, but lasers and consultation and skincare. And, you know, if your front desk is weak, like the providers are just going to be just as weak, in my opinion.
Yeah. You mentioned something there that's really timely. I had a discussion this morning with Victoria, who you guys probably all know. She's our VP of Operations here at Aesthetic Record, about people who are in our chat support. When they chat into AR, they are vicious animals. Like, you people are all
guilty.
You people are all stupid. I don't know. Like, one guy was like, "You guys are at home doing nothing all day at your coffee shop." Like, they're venomous animals. Like, venomous animals.
Oh my gosh!
And then we get on the call, and they're like, "Oh, you know, I just had a small little problem. It's no big deal." Like, huh? You just called my chat support guy a total effing idiot. You know, like, you typed that. You took the time to type that out. It's like, you typed it out, not even said it.
Yeah.
It's so funny, because she was just saying, you know, I want to say to them, just be a human. Just be a human. If you. I'm sure it's the same thing with you guys. We have, you know, 25,000 HCPs in our system in a given day. If you want to come to the front of the line, calling me effing stupid is not the way to get there, by the way. Like, you get more flies to honey, as they say, the old adage. But I feel like patients are very similar. They're really horrible to the front desk.
Very.
They're mean. They're awful. And it's like, oh, hi, Amy. It's so great to see you. And that makes me crazy. Like, that flies all over me as a person. But anyway, not to dwell on that. When you hire front desk, because I think what you're saying, I like to think of them as like the director of patient experience. They're oftentimes the least paid, the least educated. They're someone's cousin, intern, high school person. Like, front desk kind of gets left alone in the hiring department. What I think I'm hearing you say is that you probably spend a lot of time finding the right people, training them, cultivating them. What is your process for recruiting them? And like, what do you look for in a resume to say that person has what it takes to have a backbone and to survive here?
Yeah. So having a lot of front desk people over the years, I have found that when we go through this process and we need a front desk person, I certainly look at resumes, but I am a strong believer in having the person come in, and I'm like, hey, can you just sit up front for like 2 or 3 hours and just be with us for half a day and see how we roll here? Like, this may be something that is so not your vibe. Like, you're not happy. This is not what you want. And on resume, on paper, sitting in my office talking, like, everything sounds great. And like, yeah, I would love to do that. But without actually being put in the mix, it's hard to see. So I throw them up there, whoever's like shadowing or training with one of my stronger front desk people, then my main one. And then I sit down with them afterwards and I'm like, what'd you think? You know, how was it? And I've had people be like, it's a lot more than I thought it was. I actually really appreciate the opportunity to do this before I give my 2 weeks and I quit somewhere else, because this is not for me. And I'm like, great, like, me too, because that's a lot for me too. And then I've had people who are so excited and they blend really well with my other front desk girls and they talk to some of the providers. And it's just, you know, creating an environment with a lot of people and a lot of women specifically. Lots of personalities can be really difficult, and we all work so, so closely together that I think it is important that everybody mesh well to a certain degree. You can't have somebody that's a little pulled back or maybe not as passionate or not as hard of a worker. And so that working interview is what I have found over the years is so helpful with my front desk. And then, you know, if I'm between a couple people, I'll have them come back in and I'm like, hey, can you come back in? And I pick like the craziest day ever where it's just the phones are ringing off the hook. I've got 6 or 7 providers there. There is no time to sit and relax. And I just throw them into it one more time just to see if I'm unsure. And for the most part, it has worked out really well for me. Over the years, I have lost maybe 3 front desk people that I can think of, and everybody left on like really great terms, like kind of moving on, going back to school, moving. Like I have never had an experience where I had to, I haven't fire a front desk person, knock on wood yet. And so I don't anticipate that. But when I start to, I do say like, hey, if at any point you are unhappy and this is just not for you, or maybe you don't mesh well with the person that you're sitting beside for 8 or 9 hours a day, like just let me know. You know, we can peacefully part ways. It doesn't have to be dramatic and weird. And I've yet to have that happen, but the process to actually find the person, it is lengthy. I mean, I think the last couple ones we hired around the same time. And I mean, it took us like 4 to 6 weeks to really narrow it down. So we struggled for a while. We were down 2 front desk people. You know, our providers stepped in when we could, and, you know, we did as much as we could to help, but I would never impulsively hire somebody that I just didn't get that like internal feeling about. I've helped him hire enough people upstairs too, to just know within 2 minutes of talking to somebody, if they're going to mesh with his personality or not. Like I immediately know. And that just comes with tons of time and experience with him. And then also just knowing what kind of personality it takes to be front desk at a med spa.
And I think that a med spa, the culture there, you know, patients, it's a competitive advantage, right? When they walk in the front door and they can feel the energy and the ambiance, and there's no black cloud, no drama. Like that's a huge, I want to come there and feel relaxed, right? And feel great when I'm at your spa. And I think we undervalue in this industry culture. You know, my background is in learning and development, talent management. So I like obsessively deal with culture here. I interview everyone first because I want to see if you're a culture fit before anyone else gets to touch you. That way, if you have great skills, but you're a piece of crap, we don't hire you.
Yeah.
I'm the piece of crap monitor here. No, I'm kidding. But I think it's so important because people, they get so excited about the Rolodex or, oh, she has all these patients. We hear this a lot, like the rock star injector, who's like a rock star, comes with all of her patient load, and then she's a cancer, but I can't afford to fire her because she's so great. I'm like, but is she? You have 15 employees who hate their life now because she's here. Is she worth more than those 15? So this is, I think, one of our industry phenomenons that we have got to figure out how to get through. It's like culture matters because your customer, your patients, the clients, it matters to them too. They can feel that tension. But to that point on providers, by the way, 3 employees only at front desk have ever left. You should get a medal. You need to get an Olympic gold medal for that. That's crazy. But on the provider side,
I still talk to all of them too. I still talk to them like actively. I'm like, hey, I miss you. How are you? So yeah, no, it's good.
So you're a good boss is what I'm hearing you say. But on the provider side, I think I read an Instagram post that you had someone who was with you for 6 months, like in a shadowing kind of capacity, who just went full time. How does that process work? Because again, high stakes, busy practice. How do you get them in and train them to be as good as you are? And to your point, much faster than you were trained because you didn't have a training background to you know, keep the brand going and the level of standard of care going there.
Yeah. So this is newer for me. I would say in the last like maybe couple years, I've really narrowed this down and perfected it as we've grown. I think that this industry is booming, and there's new injectors on every corner. Lots of practices are trying to get into this. And I get messages daily from new nurses trying to become injectors. So my thought was, I want to make sure that someone comes in and they really start at the bottom and then they work their way up. And the best way to learn is really to watch. And my goal with everybody coming behind me is that all my patients then feel comfortable with them, because I'm maxed out. I'm capped out on patients. I can't see any more people. And I don't want to overload myself and lower my quality of care because I can't set this boundary and I don't know when to say no. So I thought, okay, well, if I want my patients to trust these people, I have to trust them fully to like be able to hand these patients over. And especially people, some of these people have been with me for a decade, you know? And so I wanted to bring people on and I want them to follow me and listen to me and move like me and talk like me so that my patients feel just as comfortable with them. And, you know, rotating with me for 6 months, the majority of all of my patients have seen who's following me and who's coming up. And I talk them up when I'm in the room. I'm like, this is Nada. This is Christy. She hasn't left my side in literally 6 months. She pulls everything for me. She anticipates my next move. I don't even tell her what dosaging I'm going to do. I make her tell me. And then typically she's right. And so I think building that and making us all on the same page, when a patient calls and they can't get in to see me or even Meredith because she's just as busy, they're going to be a lot more likely to go with injectors that have spent countless months just watching and training, and us talking them up and promoting them on social media and our emails, and in the room with people. Like, I tell them, I'm like, hey, if you can't get in to see me, like, please see Christy or please see Nada or Ashley, or if Meredith's available, like, you're in good hands. I let them inject me. I would never let somebody inject me that I wouldn't let inject you. So the 6 month training period also really allows me to get to know them very well. I mean, they know everything about my kids and my family and my school and my extracurriculars and how I drink my coffee and what I eat for lunch. And I think it just builds like that like relationship that I want, because I want so badly for them to succeed. And so I love new injectors. I love people that have never injected before. It's a huge project for me. But the long-term benefits is just, you can't even like amount to it. I mean, it's not comparable. Not saying an experienced injector wouldn't be great to bring in here so that I could just skip that whole process. But I think this has worked for me. And, you know, my injectors are forever grateful. And they oftentimes come to me and they're like, thank you so much. Like, it's just so nice to have your support or someone to just lean on or stress out about whatever, or just get a second opinion on, or for me to literally just hand my patients to them, you know, because we all make money by seeing these patients. And I tell them all, I'm like, hey, you'll have days where you're not as busy as this person and I'm not as busy as this person. But at the end of the day, like, this is like that family environment and we can all share patients and we can all inject in a similar fashion to where all of these people feel very comfortable going to whoever. So the 6 month training period is a long time to not be able to inject. During that time, I have them bring in their closest friends, their family, they inject the entire staff. Then they inject me. I really make sure I feel 100% comfortable. And then I kind of release them at about 6 months. And then I really just let them do like neurotoxin, PRF, microneedling, for another like 6 months to maybe even a year. And then I really start to train on filler. I think if you don't have that background on how to very effectively in a proper manner inject neurotoxin. I just don't think that you can get very good at doing filler and neurotoxin at the same time. So that's how I train all my people. When I do game trainings, I try not to overwhelm new injectors with even filler. I'm like, hey, please perfect, like, you're using Dysport or Botox or whatever. When that skill comes, the patients will, you'll earn their trust, they'll love you, and then they'll be open to letting you then start doing filler on them. So like we said before, this is just not something that happens overnight. It takes a long time to be very skilled at doing, like, having that art of injectables, but also just understanding, like, building that relationship with your patients. So far that has worked out for me. We don't bind our injectors in a non-compete, which is also sometimes, you know, an unpopular opinion, and it very well made it one day bite me in my ass and I might invest a solid 6 months of my life training somebody, or even longer, and then they leave. But my hopes is that they are just as happy to come to work as I am, and that that's just not going to be an issue. And if it is, then I wish them well, and I would never want to keep somebody where they were unhappy.
Well, so many things to unpack there, but I will say on the non-compete thing, I agree with you because they don't work. Like, it's not real. A non-solicitation is maybe a good idea, but one of the things, I have a couple of good friends who do what you do. They do a very long onboarding process. And a mission of them, you know, put a monetary value to that. That way, you know, if you say this 6 months is worth $85,000 in hands-on training, if you leave before 1 year, whatever the time period is, you owe back some part of that money, because it is a value, right? You can go to a court of law and say, I'm a gain trainer who gets paid per hour to train other people. My time is valuable. I've invested X amount of hours in this. Like, if you ever had a problem where that came up to bite you, put it in your contract ahead of time. Like, just value the training at some amount of money, and then never have to enforce it. If they don't leave, it's no big deal. But because I think there's like a payback period, right? If you go to work somewhere else, it's the same thing. If they invest in training you for so long, you have to stay for so long. But not the point of the story, not relevant here. But one thing that you said that I, with aesthetic necks, with all the conferences that I every year try so hard to put on stage, and I have such pushback, is that to me, neurotoxin is far more dangerous on the reg, on the everyday, than filler. Filler incidence of occlusion is like very small, right? It's like lightning. It doesn't happen very often. But every neurotoxin injection that you do, every one is in a muscle. And if it ain't the right one, sister, we got problems, right? Like, we know neurotoxin is the big bad wolf of injectables. Do you go blind? No. But can you not eat soup for a month? Maybe. Do you have an eye that's droopy and you can't, you know, it's watering all day? Maybe. Are your lips not working? Like, these things happen every day, all the time. But we don't talk about it, Amy. We don't talk about neurotoxin and the danger of the everyday, because it's not life-threatening, if you will, nor being blind, but you get the point. It's not as severe. But to me, if you cannot crush the friggin' game with neurotoxin, I don't care about how good you are at filler, because neurotoxin to me is the highest risk area on the face, because the adverse events are so much more common. I'll stop there. Yeah. Any thoughts on that?
No, I completely agree. And I, when people ask me, like, well, how did you get to do, like, how do you see so many people, and how are you seeing 30 people a day and over 100 people a week? And I tell them, like, I spent years doing just neurotoxin and maybe like a few syringes a week or something like that. It builds your practice. If you can't master it and you can't be a master at it, like an actual pro, and be 100% comfortable and confident that you are going to give these people stellar results, then you are not going to get them back for filler, and you are not going to get their trust for your lasers. And you're not going to send them to your plastic surgeon, like, you're going to lose them, and they're going to go somewhere else and find somebody who has that neurotoxin skill. So you have got to be good at it. Without it, like, I think your practice just crumbles, and trying to learn so much at one time is just, it's hard. There's so many products to choose from when it comes to like filler and stuff, but neurotoxin, you know, you've got your main ones. You pretty much dilute them the same across the board. pick your poison, if you will, go with whatever neurotoxin you prefer. But the technique on all of them is the same. So I'm so with you on that. I think it's so important. It's so easily grazed over. I can't tell you how many like gain trainings I've gone to and they're brand new injectors and they want to do temple filler. And I'm like, whoa, let's put the brakes on, you know, let's like just talk about neurotoxin. Let's just talk about Dysport. Let's like map the face out. And then we can always come back to that and do it at a later day. So yes, it is very easily grazed over. You know, Instagram makes filler look glamorous and easy to do. And, you know, it can be a higher ticket item. So I can see maybe where new injectors would want to get their skill level up on that. But again, if you don't have that base skill with neurotoxin, then yeah, filler is just filler. And you probably won't even get them back to do filler. So I agree with you.
Yeah, there's completely. You know, these ideas of like myomodulation, dynamic Dysport, like all these things in the face that are muscle or accessory muscle driven. Filler, if you're going to use filler to fix that problem, you're going to have to know how to do it. And you need to understand neurotoxin first. Mm-hmm. To substitute one for the other. Like, I could go on for days and I won't, but I ran gain for several years, you guys all know that, but I would hear the stories about, I walked in the front door, she's never held a syringe in her life, and the first thing she said was, hey, can we do tear troughs today? And I would just cringe of like, who set that expectation with her on Instagram that was the thing you do first? Like, why don't we try to figure out the 11s? Like, let's go to somewhere that we can maybe master, and that will grow your practice. You can't grow a practice on tear troughs. You grow a practice on toxin. Like, in the beginning, that's how you start. You don't start on these areas that no one's going to trust you on because you're brand new anyway, and where the adverse events are so severe if you have a problem that it is, you know, it shuts your practice down. If you're brand new and have blindness, you're done. Like, hang it up, sister. It's not happening for you. But
yeah, you're done.
Anywho, but yes, I agree with you. It's so funny to hear people when they like, I want to do temples today. Like, have you ever done lifts? Nope, never done it. Scared of it. Well,
I know. Always, my heart drops. I'm like, let's do some Dysport first.
Yeah. Well,
just start there.
As we kind of wrap up, let's talk a bit about that. You're obviously have talked about how incredibly busy your practice is, what you're doing, what you're building, and now you're taking time away to go be a gain trainer, which I know is, first of all, a lot of fun, very rewarding, especially if you like to train, but also it's just time out of the practice. And the money there is not the same as injecting patients. What was your decision behind that, and how are you fitting that in now? Because I think lots of folks who listen to our show are in the same place you're in. They have a busy practice. They want to be an influencer in the sense of like an educator. But it's like, I can't do it. I'll lose money and I'll lose time. How did you make it all work?
Yeah, I think that's also a big part too of why I like love being a part of a practice, because I have the support of Dr. Mountcastle to kind of go off and do training with gain, which, yeah, I could sit here and bring in three times as much in the amount of training that I do. So it is so rewarding though to get out and meet people. I truly, every practice I've walked into has been so grateful and so receptive and so eager to learn, that it makes me so happy. Like it fills my cup. It gets me out of the office of just day by day, every 15 minutes for 10 hours straight, just injecting and kind of, you know, keeping it all together for my patients. Like, you can't come in to this job with a bad day. And that's hard sometimes, you know, like you have to be on 24/7. And it's not that you don't have to be on when I'm gain training, but I sometimes almost feel like I'm walking into a group of friends and it's like a collaborative event. And I've learned stuff from certain injectors and other brand new injectors. You know, I'm kind of just like encouraging enough to like, hey, I was you, like we've all been you, and it's scary and it's intimidating. But what, you know, you're seeing online and Instagram is like, it is not real life. Of course, there's fabulous Instagram injectors who have made it and have extremely successful practices. And that's so cool. But that's not the majority of us. And so I think just even people hearing like little things like that goes a long way, because it's discouraging when you've seen this stuff online and you're like, I can do that. And then you start doing it and you're like, holy shit, this is hard. Like, this is hard work. Like, I don't, what muscle is here and what's going to happen if I do this? And oh my, I'm not sleeping at night because I don't know if I messed that up. And a lot of things start running through your head. And then you've got the whole side of just patient care. I mean, we're not in the hospital. These patients are choosing to come see us. These are elective aesthetic procedures. People can be difficult sometimes, and people can be there for injectables, not for the right reasons. And learning who to inject and who not to inject took me years to understand and master, and just when to say no and kind of when to just start to recognize some of those red flags. So I love sharing that with people that would have no idea until they fell upon a patient that was just a red flag from the beginning. So when I start my game trainings, like, we go through a full consult, but not even just a consult, like, about their face. Because I think just as important is sitting down and talking to your patient, building that relationship. That first time you talk to them, you are setting the stage for life with them. I mean, for your whole relationship. It's like dating, you know, you're setting the stage and you're making sure that you guys are a comparable match and that you're the right injector for them. And I spent so many years not doing that and just filling nasal labial folds and just putting one syringe in the cheeks and then sending them on their way because I just didn't know better. And maybe I didn't have like the confidence and the background that I do now. And so getting out there and training with GAIN has been so awesome. And I love doing it. I've probably taken on like a little more than I can handle. And I am trying to be better about setting boundaries and saying no, but I love working with all of my territory reps right here. They're amazing people. They're so kind. They're so grateful. And like I said, all the accounts I train are incredible. It's just balancing this with training. At a minimum, I train once a week, but usually it's like 1 to 3. So some days I'll do a double training. And then at night I sit down and I do schoolwork. So I spend 2 hours after I put my kids to bed writing papers and submitting stuff. So I don't have very moments of my day where I'm not doing something. And it's a lot. And so I think, again, a lot of injectors who maybe see me from like looking in and they're like, oh my gosh, how is she that busy and blah, blah, blah. And that's not fair. But I put a lot of hard work into what I do, and I didn't get here overnight, and I don't claim to, you know, I came in this scene before Instagram was a thing. I was so reluctant to get one. I don't like getting on it very often. But I get the need for it. And I know that that's how our industry is. And that is how you can build a practice quickly. But I just really thrive and love patient referrals. I love word of mouth. That is who I prefer and who I love seeing. Again, I don't really take new patients very much anymore because I have an amazing support staff that helps me with all of those. But yeah, the balance is tough and I am learning every day by it. And I struggle and I'm tired. But I still leave my job here and I leave my training jobs like feeling good. Like I feel happy about what I've done. And so for that, I'm super grateful.
Well, I love on your Instagram, you have a red X. It's like, I don't take any patients that aren't combination therapy, which yes. So I used to do the GAIN business thing. We were just mentioning this, we were talking before that before it was GAIN, yeah. It was AMP, and I would talk about that. Like when you go to the hairstylist, she says, I have time for a cut and color. You don't just get the cut, it's a cut and color. The massage person says, I have a 60 minute opening, not a 30, a 60 minute. So if you want this, you're going to pay for 60. Like we force people in other parts of our lives to comply with whatever we have available, and we don't say a word about it. But when it comes to injectables, like, oh no, I'm toxin only, I don't need all that. Well, tough shit. Come next week. Come in 6 months when I have an opening. Like, I loved it. Yeah. I was like, you go, Amy. You tell them if it's not everything, we're not doing it. Because it's not worth your time. It's not worth your time.
Yeah, that was hard. That was hard for me. I think, and I tell injectors this too, like, knowing your worth is important in this industry. And a lot goes into like our training. There's a lot of money that's involved, and just not like devaluing yourself. And so that also took me a long time to not want to like squeeze everybody in and do this and do that to just accommodate everybody. And now I'm just like, you know what? If you just want to do 20 units in your glabella, that's great. I have amazing injectors that can see you for that. But my time is better served at this point in time, kind of taking care of those full facial balancing rejuvenations. So
I think too, it's a matter of like revenue per hour. You're probably more expensive, I'm guessing, than others, because you're the head boss here, the HBIC. Mm-hmm. So you probably cost more. So for you to do toxin all day would not make enough money. I mean, it would not be profitable for you. You need to be doing more. And I'm sure you're probably pretty quick at this point. You've been doing it for a long time. You're fast and efficient. Yeah. So it doesn't make business sense. It isn't even about the money or like the prestige. It's like, it just doesn't make business sense to do it. It's not a smart idea. But so I love that, by the way. I think everyone should do that and just say, if you want to see me, you got to play with my rules. And if you don't, that's okay. Yeah. But these are the rules. But to that point, you know, thinking just through the training, I love the fact that you're training because you're training so much in your practice. I'm sure that you're a great trainer in the field. And they probably love you for that because you train all the time. You can always tell folks who are trainers who have been doing trainings like in their practices. They've been, you know, shadow days, things like that, because they come to the table with gain and they're already awesome. It's like you can just let them go run the play. Here's the deck. Here's the injectors. Have fun. Versus someone who's wanting to do it because they just want to be a trainer. Like, they just, it's important to them to have their name out there. If you're passionate about it and you love it, you love it, and you do it in your practice already, you're going to be great. So I have no doubt that they're going to use you. You're going to have to tell them no. Say, dear Galderma girls, no, I can't do anymore. I'm maxed out.
I'm trying.
It's a good problem to have, but I cannot believe we've been on for like an hour. It's shocking. I could talk to you all day. I'm like mesmerized with what you're building and how you're building it and doing all the things. MP school. When do you finish up with your MP stuff?
Oh my gosh. I'm 10 months down, 20 to go.
Well, as a person who's done a few extra degrees, it gets easier as you get closer, but it's also more like, oh, it's like having a baby, right? The last few months are the worst. It's like, you just got to get through it. But what was your decision to do that? Just because you wanted to do it for yourself?
I did. Yeah. I just felt like this is kind of the next step in my education. And I'm a glutton for punishment, I guess. Like, I just challenge myself constantly. And I wanted to have that degree behind my name, especially with the amount of maybe trust and pressure I have on me too. Just everything to protect myself. You know, I know certain states only NPs can inject. I don't foresee that happening in Virginia, but I have no idea, with the industry becoming a little bit more flooded, with nurses trying to get out of the hospital and into this, maybe that could happen. And so I would hate to just be under this like time crunch of, okay, you have X amount of time to get your NP. So I feel like I'm doing this on my time and my terms, and it's part time. I'm going relatively slow, but also quick at the same time. You know, I have two kids, they're 5 and 9. So by no means do they not need me, but you know, they sleep at night, they can grab themselves a snack. Like, I'm just kind of at that point where I'm like, okay, I have a couple years before maybe they get busier with activities and this and that, where I can just knock this out and then never have to think about it again.
Yeah, I think that you're not wrong. I think we're going to see legislation, unfortunately, probably across the country before too long, saying you have to be an MP. I have this like sneaking suspicion that medical boards, the lobbyist groups, you know, again, the influx of providers, that there's going to come a day where people are going to say you have to have that. So I agree with you. Get it done now. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? You're more educated? Oh, darn.
Yeah.
Oh, darn. I can make more money. I'm more educated and I have prescriptive power. Gosh, I hate that myself.
Yeah, right.
There is no downside here. No downside here. Just do it. And join the rest of us who were gluttons for punishment and did it as well. Come to the dark side with us. But for the record, you have been a fantastic guest.
Thank you.
Season 3 is better because you're in it. And I look forward to hearing all the things that you're doing. Give us like what's coming up next for you. Can we find you somewhere training? Are you on any podiums? Are you just crushing it and living life at your practice? What's next?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just living life at my practice. I'm at gosh, I think I have like 8 more gain trainings until November 30th, and then all my reps are out of budget. So I'm taking December off of training, and I'm just going to focus kind of on my newer injectors here and just get them up to speed on filler. So nothing big, just working on school too. So getting through all of that.
Well, if you're in the Virginia, Maryland, that whole area, and you want to be trained, tell your rep that you want to see Amy, that you want to request
yes.
her. And I hope that we get you on the podium next year at Aesthetic Next. We want to hear what you have to say. So mark your calendar and be on our podium next year.
I love that, yeah.
And share some info.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for coming on today. And for those of you listening and watching, make sure to download all of our episodes, subscribe, follow, like, all the things. And we'll be back with another one next week. So, Amy, we will talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tiffany.
Bye. Thanks for listening to another episode of For the Record. This podcast is not intended to provide legal or medical advice. It's for entertainment, education, and information purposes only. For more information on this week's guest or to get started with Aesthetic Record, email us at info@aestheticrecord.com. Be sure to tune in next week for more fresh perspectives on disrupting the status quo and surviving in the aesthetics industry.